Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're coming back to you after a very interesting and exciting Labor Day weekend for your Toronto Blue Jays. Things are, the spirits are high, I think is the best way to describe the sense of things around the Toronto Blue Jays. My spirits are high right now because I am joined remotely from the Big Apple itself. I'm joined by Caitlin McGrath, co-host of Spin Rate, covers the Blue Jays for the Athletic. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good. Yes, this is my first time recording the pod on the road because it's my first time being on the road in quite a long while. I mean, first time in season being away since 2019 season. I'm not even sure what my last trip was. Probably was the trade deadline, maybe. And obviously I was in spring training in 2020. But that was basically like the last time that I was in the U.S. So back, made it over here. They let me in. And yeah, this should be a good week to be following the Blue Jays because, you know, it's gonna be kind of a season-defining stretch here, I think.
You could have picked a worse weekend, or things could have gone worse on the weekend, allowing you to show up to a funereal atmosphere around the team, but quite the opposite. Before we talk about that, before we talk about, find out all about Caitlin's travel struggles, this is one thing people love to listen to on podcasts. It's about what it's like to go through airport security during COVID-19, which we'll get to, because I'm interested to hear how that process has been. Speaking of process, I think it's important that you process your payments, Jesus, for The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/spinrate. If you don't subscribe now, you should subscribe as of this second. Let them know that we sent you. Sign up, give you a tidy, delightful discount. You can read all of Caitlin's dispatches from the road. You can read the Yankees perspective from Lindsay Adler, for example, who's been covering the team. Wrote a great story recently on Joey Gallo, who has been the subject of much conversation in my mentions, as you might imagine, in the last couple of days. But I think you should do that. You should go and subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/spinrate. And you can subscribe to this show that we do twice a week. At least twice a week. God only knows what's going to happen as if this little streaky streak of streaks continues, but no promises. But go and subscribe to the show. Subscribe to Spin Rate wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a rating and a review. We're having ourselves a good time. We had a great episode last week with C. Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic talking a lot about Joey Votto. It's a great chat. I feel bad. I didn't want to take any more of his time, but we were just having such a great time. So if you haven't listened to that one, please go ahead. Go back and listen. It's evergreen content, which we're always after here in the biz. But I don't want evergreen content right now, Caitlin. I want to know about the here and the now. How was getting to New York? And what's it like covering the team in the United States of America during a global pandemic? That's over, question mark?
Honestly, travel wasn't too different from what it normally is. There's more involved prior to travel now, so you have to get COVID tested before you go to United States. So I think it's basically at least 3 days or within a 3-day window before your departure day, you have to get tested. So I was able to do that. And then when you go to the airport, it's just like a few extra pieces of paper that you got to carry with you, essentially, like your test result. And there's also a paper you need to sign to confirm that you've got the negative test result. And you hand that in, and then it's just going through security and basically wearing your mask the entire time. You know, they're maybe a little bit stricter, and they're definitely checking your bags and all that carefully, but it was pretty much a breeze to get through security, honestly. Like, I got to the airport quite early just in case, and I had plenty of time. And I think I left at a point where it was probably a quiet time at the airport regardless, because I left on Sunday sort of like around, well, I got there in like the afternoon on Sunday, which I don't think would be a busy time at the airport, just given like most people wouldn't be traveling in like the middle of Labor Day weekend when I was leaving. So that might have factored in. And yeah, the flight was really nice. I got bumped up to like business class, which has never happened to me before. So
really?
Yeah, I don't even know how it happened. I assume there's a lot of families on the flight, and I was a single one person. And so maybe if they were trying to like keep families together and stuff like that, I probably got bumped out of the original seat that I had, and I got put in the front. So, you know, I mean, pretty good to get bumped to business class. It was on a flight that's quite short, but I'm not complaining. And yeah, and being in New York, it's fun. It's been a while since I've been here. I think I came in 2019 when the Blue Jays were here at one point. Obviously I've been here a few times before that, but yeah, it's, you know, things came back to me fairly quickly, getting to Yankee Stadium, kind of navigating around Yankee Stadium. Another fun thing is that I actually got to meet my editor, who's based in New York, for the first time. So we've been working together basically this entire season, my editor, Rachel. And so we actually got to meet in person for the first time. So that was neat as well. And so, yeah, all things are good. It was kind of cool to be on the road again, and cool to be around the team on the road. And it's always nice when there's just kind of less people. There's only a handful of us from Toronto here covering the team right now. So that was kind of good. We got a little nugget today when we were sitting in the dugout waiting for Charlie to come out, and out walks Julian Merriweather, the man himself. I swear he's real. He's here in New York. And so, yeah, then you kind of know, okay, well, Julian Merriweather's probably getting called up here soon. Hasn't happened yet because he just pitched in Buffalo on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so obviously they're, you know, not going to be using him back to back. And so the roster move wasn't necessary, but it's obviously coming because he's here and he talked to us today and he said he's feeling good. So those are some little, you know, cool things about being on the road, is you get to see things and you're here and you're present, and also a pretty good game to be at, which I'm sure we'll get into.
We should get into that. I am forever interested in the process and what it's like getting around and navigating and getting the negative tests and getting, I've been tested twice in the last week. I was exposed. But so far, my first test was negative. I went for another one today, just to be sure, because public health told me I went too soon the last time around. But
did you do the rapid test?
No, I just went and made an appointment at the regular testing thing. Again, I don't have any symptoms or anything, so it's all good. I've still been out gallivanting about. It's like, because that's all you, when you're fully vaccinated, all you got to do is self-monitor. But I'm glad to see that you're back out there. Meeting people in real life is fun. Meeting colleagues that you have or haven't seen in some time, getting some FaceTime and see even little things like, hey, that's Julian Merriweather. He hasn't been on this team for quite a while. Potentially an exciting add to the bullpen. Which that just recently had maybe an exciting ad. We can talk about that as well. But let's not go any further before we talk about the stuff that people want us to talk about, which is, this is all coming on a pretty nice time of year. Obviously, there's never a bad time to win a bunch of games, especially the teams that are ahead of you in the schedule. But I think the nature of the way this whole thing started on Friday night and then moving here through Monday's game, spirits, as I said, are pretty high around the Blue Jays, because I don't know if firing on all cylinders is exactly accurate, but they're scoring runs again, and yet also the starting pitching is still looking pretty great. What I'll ask you, Caitlin, what do you think is the biggest story Or what's the biggest contributor? What is this kind of fueling this? Is it, would you say it's the offense? Is it the starting pitching? Is it timely hits? Is there one thing that jumps out to you in your mind and says, this is what has helped the Blue Jays grab those games against Oakland and then get off to a good start in the series against the Yankees?
I think it's the offense. I mean, because it's just such a difference of what they had been doing the previous 2 weeks or so. Basically, since that sort of West Coast road trip towards the end of it, they were still scoring runs or they weren't winning. And then when they came back, the runs just really dried up for them. And so, you know, one thing is that they're hitting home runs again, a lot of home runs. They are hitting those home runs when guys are on base. They're scoring when guys are on base. So the drought that they had going with runners in scoring position is, you know, more or less over. They're driving guys in now. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is like responsible for a lot of runs in the last few games here in their 5-game winning streak so far. So yeah, to me, the offense is the biggest story right now, just because like that was so, kind of confusing and confounding. It was like, what was going on with the offense? Like they just were not scoring the way that we knew they could score. And all throughout that, the starting pitching was really good, which is how they were able to like squeak out those really close games in Detroit and even against Baltimore when they just weren't scoring a ton of runs, but the pitching was really good and they were keeping them in games. And the bullpen, you know, has been fairly steady. But even so, like even when the bullpen has had some hiccups, like that Friday game, we talked about like Manoa wasn't quite at his best in that game. And then the bullpen wasn't quite at its best either. And then you had Jordan Romano coming in and he gave up the first runs that he'd given up in a month, but then the offense came through. And so that's to me, why the offense is storyline here is like, it has been sort of the reason why they've won these games. And like, certainly the Yankees didn't score a run today, so they could have won 1-0, but they won 8-0. And so that just like looks a lot better. It looks a lot more, you know, like they're, you know, really playing at their very best. And it's just more of a sort of dramatic and an emphatic win. That was the word I was looking for. I couldn't think of it.
You made the point that I agree with the most. And it's a point that I've made myself in a couple, whatever, media, like radio things. And that's the home runs. The home runs, there's no, you can't put a price on the value of the long ball, especially from a team that's built around that as an offense. I mean, you think to the early parts of the game here on Monday against the Yankees, where they obviously got off to a quick start through the home run, but then they had a lead. So they had a couple opportunities where the Yankees, who played some pretty weak defense here on the Labor Day Monday game, were giving the Blue Jays opportunities and they didn't really take advantage of them early on, which looked a lot like what was happening when that was plaguing the Blue Jays through August. But when you've already hit two home runs, you're already off to a lead. And then later on, when the floodgates open, it's the home run that makes that fuels those run scoring outbursts. It's the home run that just is the great equalizer. It's the way the game is played. It's the way the team is designed. And it doesn't, you don't have to have the timely hits or move the runner over. It helps, you know, in those instances when the home runs do dry up, it helps to offset that. But again, that a team that's built to hit home runs, a team that is that now we're seeing in the last little while, like getting offense from all over, up and down mm-hmm. the lineup. Obviously, Marcus Semien has had a great, you know, few days. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got his 40th home run here on Monday. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. had an amazing weekend series and then continued it against the Yankees as well. But you know, you Alejandro Kirk hitting the ball over the fence. Danny Jansen had a great game. I mean, there's no substitute for hitting the ball over the fence. It's just such a huge thing and it sets the whole thing off. And then, you know, then the next thing you know, the pitching has been so strong and they're able to weather the storm when Oakland mounts their comeback or when the Blue Jays are mounting that furious comeback of their own. I think you said it maybe before we started to record that Friday game in Oakland, the big comeback, Blue Jays were down at 1.8-2, finally come back to win 11-10, was one of the craziest games you've ever covered. I can't, just the sound, the noise, 15,000 people sounded like a lot more when Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hit that ball out in the eighth inning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that game was a part of it. And this Charlie said this afterwards, and, like, I agree with it. Like, it just all kind of happened so quickly. I mean, the eighth inning when they were, like, slowly kind of chipping away at it and they had the bases loaded, and then I think it was Kirk that took the walk that drove in one run, and then it was Lourdes that came up. And that inning had a lot of slow build drama to it, because it was like all these walks, a hit by pitch for Bo. I think then Vlad had a single that drove in one, and then it was like another two walks to Teoscar and then Kirk, and then you finally had Gurriel. So it was like a really slow build, and it was like, wow, they're doing it, they're building momentum. They did that with two outs, I think, because earlier in the inning, I think I don't know how they did it, but there was two outs in that. But anyway, and then he hit the grand slam, and then it was like pandemonium in there, and it was like, wow, this game is tied. Like, it was, and then so quickly, the inning ended, and you have Jordan Romano coming out, and you know, then before you could even blink, the A's had gone ahead by two again, and yes, the air was like completely sapped out of the building at that point. But then there was just like this kind of feeling, like the ninth inning, it just started. And again, right away, the Blue Jays like built this momentum, got two on right away. And then Simeon came up, and it was almost like I just had this feeling, or like it just sort of seemed like it was going to happen. Like, I don't know how you can really even describe that, but it had the feel of this win that like the Blue Jays have lost so many games in that sort of disappointing fashion. And this one, I don't know, something about the comeback and just something about the way that they were swinging in that eighth inning. And Bo said it, and I think it was kind of true, is like they were reminded of how good they can be. Like, it almost was like this one inning where they score a lot, they come back, they do these dramatic things, and it almost kind of like ignited the entire team. And I was like, no, we are a team that can come back. We are a team that can score runs in bunches. Like, this is what we do. And like, that seemed to have really sparked the club. And like, you know, I don't know if there's anything to that. It could be completely coincidence that now they're just scoring a lot of runs, because you know, they are a team that scores a lot of runs. There's plenty of material, plenty of evidence that says the Blue Jays are a team that can consistently score 5, 6, 7, 8 runs a game. Like, they can do that. So, you know, maybe it's just a total coincidence that they're snapping out of it now. But I don't know. Like, to me, like, for the narrative's sake, because I'm a storyteller and I like to lean into that kind of stuff, it does seem like something really clicked with them in that inning where they were able to mount the comeback. And even when they went down again, like, there was just really no sense in that team that they were going to quit or that that game was going away. And it was really kind of like perfect, if you want to write it up, because Simeon had not been having the greatest game that day. And then obviously his former team, he was beloved in Oakland and they're all very good friends with him. And he's just been having such a spectacular season with Toronto, and he hit that home run, and it was just like, you know, kind of like, of course he did it. Like, of course that's the way that this game was going to end. Like, how could a dramatic game like this end in any other way?
In that game as well, you know, obviously there was all the extra baggage and the series, the earlier game, was that same game with everybody getting, with Manoah hitting everybody?
Yeah.
So like all these guys are getting hit and it's all heated, and Josh Harrison is apparently, you know, public enemy number one in Toronto yeah. for some reason. And he's having a great time with it, you know, leaning in and inviting everybody to boo him. I think that the narrative points are obviously strong. I also think that the A's bullpen is a disaster.
Yes.
And not only is the A's bullpen a disaster, it's also a bullpen that doesn't match up well against the Blue Jays. They don't have those like really hard throwing slider guys. You know, they're not like the White Sox bullpen or the Rays bullpen. I think that is the kind that typically could give the Blue Jays a lot of trouble. You know, you see, what's his name? Lou Trevino, who came in and was like, just didn't have any command of the zone. And then also was not in a position to take advantage of maybe the Blue Jays' aggressiveness. But I think that's also, you described some of the walks. And then even today, like Randall Grichuk drew a walk, and which is, you know, a momentous occasion in and of itself, which is to say that maybe they have when there is that belief, when balls are flying over the fence and there is the understanding that other guys in the lineup you don't have to do it all, and Vlad doesn't have to do it all, and Bobichet doesn't have to do it all, maybe they've been freed up to be the best version of themselves, I think maybe is what we could say. And speaking of which, I mean, I was just looking since Thursday. If you go from Thursday to Monday, the Blue Jays have hit, I believe, 9 home runs. They have a 200 weighted runs created plus as a team over like the 122 plate appearances between then and now. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We should, of course, talk about the pitching, too. Robbie Ray continued to do the damn thing. Did he pitch it? Was it a two-hitter that he pitched, or was it just one that he allowed?
One hitter.
One hit. That's which, you know, how could I sell him short like that? And then a really strong outing from Hyunjin Ryu here today on Monday. A little bit, there was some question, I think, it's fair to ask about the Charlie Montoyo going to get him after just 80 pitches, turning it over to the bullpen, ended up obviously not being an issue, ended up working out really well, not only because Trevor Richards pitched so well, got a lot of strikeouts, and then Adam Simber was there to kind of close it up, and Tim Mazza pitched well as well. But also, I don't know if there was any talk about that in the post game about what made 80 pitches of very good Ryu. I don't know if his last outing was maybe looming large in Charlie Montoyo's mind. Was there anything that was that a point of discussion at all on the old Zoom call?
Yes, it was. Actually, Ryu said he wanted to come out. He said that his he was throwing his slider more, which he doesn't throw a lot. And I think his slider's really like similar to his cutter, but he just doesn't throw the slider a lot. But he said he was kind of inspired by Robbie Ray's like success that he's had with the slider, and so he was going to it a lot. And he said that because he was throwing it, his arm was feeling a little tight, and he just wanted to end the day at 6 innings, 80 pitches. I mean, maybe somewhere in the back of his mind, he was also sort of thinking, you know what, I've done a good job today. And Charlie and Pete obviously didn't put up much of a fight to say, no, we need you to go 7 or 8 or whatever. So, and no coach, no pitching coach or manager would suggest that if a starter like Ryu says he's done for the day. So, yeah, I mean, obviously maybe I hear arm tightness and I'm a little, concerned, but I'm just going to keep an eye on that, I guess. I remember a while back, I think Ross Stripling had mentioned throwing his slider a lot and having some arm tightness. And then I think he's gone away from his slider a little bit more. And so maybe it's just something Ryu was trying, and I don't know if he'll do it or, you know, whatever, maybe, but he didn't sound concerned. He said he'll go about his normal thing. So maybe it was just like a precaution sort of thing. But I think also, it was nice to get him out there when the numbers were really good, whatever it was, 3 hits, no runs, 6 strikeouts or something like that over 6. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice outing for Ryu. Really kind of resets him here for the final stretch here. And like you said, like at least they were able to get really good performances out of the bullpen. And honestly, the fact that Simeon hit the grand slam in the 9th inning was really helpful for the bullpen too, because they had Jordan Romano up when it was just a 4-0 lead. Then they obviously didn't have to go to him. So that was also good, because knowing the Yankees and knowing the Blue Jays, probably one of these games is going to be pretty close. So you'd like to have Jordan, you know, available for a game that's closer than 4-0 or 5-0 or whatever it may be.
Absolutely. Jordan Romano pitched quite a bit over the weekend, anecdotally. I'm just thinking again, and victimized. I mean, he gave up the home run on Friday, and I believe he gave up a home run again on Saturday in a game that sort of got a little bit closer coming down the end, coming down towards the to the end. But again, just a great beginning to this series for the Blue Jays. A great coming off of that great weekend, of course, where the Blue Jays were able to make up some ground on Oakland, and now here they are doing the same thing, making up ground on the Yankees. Meanwhile, the Red Sox blowing a huge lead, eventually losing, just like the Blue Jays won 11-10. The Rays come all the way back to beat the Red Sox 11-10 in what cannot be a good day at the office for Red Sox fans. But you mentioned Marcus Semien, and we've kind of talked about him again. An amazing weekend, an amazing game here. Two home runs. He's putting together quite a season. Just unbelievable numbers, hitting for power. He's up to what, 36 home runs in the year now? No, it's more than that.
37
home runs. Just an unbelievable season. He's how many RBIs? I don't even look at those things. 187 RBIs. That sounds like a lot. 133 weighted runs created plus. Obviously continuing to play every day, playing great defense. Really difficult to overstate just how great between he and Robbie Ray. Just pretty good bit of business for the Toronto Blue Jays in terms of free agent signings from last winter.
I think the Semien signing always looked like it could be really good. I mean, I think most people looked at his 2020 and just saw it was a strange year. And if you kind of localized the final stretch and then his playoff, the numbers were really good. Mm-hmm. And so I think almost always people were going to like that signing. I think it always was probably going to be a good one just because of the player that he'd been, and the Blue Jays' confidence that he was going to get back to who he was, and all the reasons for why his 2020, you know, wasn't quite what he wanted it to be. You know, injury and just not having the routine, and I believe his wife was pregnant, so it was just a lot of stuff was going on for him. The Ray signing, you know, is interesting to look back on because if you remember in the offseason, there was sort of like a lot of debate of like who the Blue Jays should bring back. And if you remember, like Taijuan Walker was really good for the Blue Jays down the stretch in 2020, you know, probably better than Robbie Ray. His numbers were a little like, you know, his numbers were good, but the expected numbers weren't so good. And the peripherals around Taijuan Walker's numbers weren't so good. But you know, the ERA was good and everything looked really good with him. And Robbie Ray was not quite like opposite, but like Robbie Ray's numbers didn't stand out as much, but he was throwing a lot more strikes than he did with Arizona. And he was making improvements with Toronto. And there was this stuff to like, the strikeout power and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I do remember the discourse that even dragged on into this year of, you know, fans being kind of upset the Blue Jays didn't do more to get Taijuan Walker. And now not only does Ray look like obviously the better choice, and, you know, Taijuan Walker's having a good season with the Mets, and that deal's probably going to be a good one for the Mets. But, you know, Ray is a Cy Young candidate. We'll see how Gerrit Cole pitches tomorrow. But, I mean, it's really, to me, the race is down to Gerrit Cole and Robbie Ray at this point, I think. And it's going to kind of determine how these two teams fare. And I think if the Blue Jays make a run and get really close, and Ray's a big part of that, I do think he has a really good shot at winning, as long as he doesn't have sort of like one or two bad starts here down the stretch. And another thing, though, that I want to say is that, like, Steven Matz also, like, looking at his numbers, like, he's been a really fine fifth starter as well. And I think, like, he kind of goes under the radar a little bit. He's going to be pitching here on Tuesday, Blue Jays' next game. And he's coming off a really good month of August. His last outing was he had that one inning where he just couldn't find the zone, but he really battled and, you know, got through it. And, you know, when you think about what the Blue Jays did in this offseason in the pitching and what they've done in the last 2 years with their pitching, and it's all looked really good. I mean, Steven Matz, Robbie Ray, even Ross Stripling, bringing him in. He's a versatile guy. Ryu, obviously. Like, and I was looking at the stat today. The Blue Jays starting pitching numbers in the second half are the third best in baseball. Mm-hmm. They're just ahead of the New York Yankees. Their ERA is something like 3.29. And also, obviously, Berríos bringing him in has been a huge factor as well. But, you know, I think I mentioned this before, or I've definitely tweeted it, but, like, certainly we got to retire the narrative that the Blue Jays did not do enough for, with their starting pitching, or, like, starting pitch. That's the problem with these Blue Jays, that they didn't have enough starting pitching. I mean, that is not the issue at all. It has not been the issue since, like, May.
No, they've done really well in terms of, you know, tidy little pieces of business. Steven Matz has worked out better than you can imagine. Robbie Ray is about to become, I believe, just the seventh Blue Jays pitcher to ever put up like a 7-win season, which is crazy, right? I mean, the Blue Jays between if Ray gives them 7 wins and Marcus Semien's on his way to 7 or 8 wins. Like, we're talking about 14 wins at it from two players that they signed on 1-year contracts. Anybody could have signed them. And I tweeted this about Oakland. You know, the A's fans are freaking out because the two things they didn't do, they let Liam Hendricks walk. Obviously, he signed for a lot of money in Chicago. Their bullpen is in tatters. Their shortstops are among the worst shortstops they've in all of baseball. The Oakland A's shortstops have posted like a 58 weighted runs created plus. Like, they've hit 3 home runs as shortstops. Like, Robbie Ray hit more than that this weekend, right? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And he's having a great season. And yeah, like, you didn't know what you were going to get from Alek Manoah. I don't think if we were sitting here, you and I were talking before the season, we said, oh yeah, Alek Manoah is going to come in. He's going to have, you know, what's he at, 19 starts now or something like that. Like, he's had a great season. And he's pitching really well. You know, he didn't have a great outing on Friday night, but at the same time, it's like his numbers still are strong. They're still looking really good. He still is just absolutely looking the part and being exactly everything that they needed in terms of someone coming in and filling that spot. You can't ask for that. I mean, he's pitched 80 innings and he's allows barely over his whip is just over 1, like 88 strikeouts. He's the king of soft contact, like misses bats, a huge boost to that rotation. And Robbie Ray is the same thing. It's really something to see, because again, that was the question coming into the season. It was like, who's going to pitch these innings? Well, those questions, a lot of them have been answered. Mm-hmm. Let's do some more. Well, we're appreciating people. Why don't we appreciate Lourdes Gurriel Jr., a guy who got off to a dreadful start to the season, and now he is looking like the hero. Obviously, that huge grand slam, another big home run. There were you and I when we were trading for Joey Gallo, who's gone like 0 for August or 0 for September. Lourdes Gurriel was involved in a lot of those deals. I mean, is this? This is a loaded question, but like, do we think that this is a better reflection of who Lourdes Gurriel actually is and who he can be moving forward, or is this just kind of a guy on a bit of a heater at the moment?
Well, the thing with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is, I think what he is a guy that goes on heaters, like, and he does this with somewhat frequency, you know? Like, I remember him coming up in 2018 and going on this kind of tear when he was a rookie and he was setting these sort of like rookie hitting streak records. And then 2019 is kind of a blur to me, but I assume he went on some kind of tear in 2019 as well. I don't remember it as vividly. And the reason why I remember like Lourdes Gurriel's tear in 2018 is like he was doing it and it was right around the trade deadline and we were in Chicago and he got a hit and then he like got injured running the bases or something like that. And so I just remember it because I was in Chicago at the time. And, but yeah, like I think that he is probably not quite this guy because this is someone that's hitting like 400 or whatever it may be. But I do think he's probably closer to the type of player that he's been in the second half, which is very much, a good above average hitter. And I've talked to Blue Jays before and you know, asking them like, about Lourdes Gurriel or just about the team in general. And a lot of them will say like, he's the best pure hitter. Like he is just, you know, I think someone was tweeting this today. And if you look at his swing when he's on, like, it's just a really beautiful swing too. Like it's something that you want to watch. And when he hit that grand slam, like it was just such a really great beautiful swing. And it was such a well-connected ball. And it just was such a no-doubter as well. I don't really see it in the moment because I'm like far away, but just watching it back, like, I'm like, wow, like you can just really see it on the TV, just how he connects and how when his timing is on, he's just a really exciting player to watch. And he is hard to get out because he can make a lot of hard contact. He hits the ball really hard. I think we don't, because Blue Jays have so many guys that hit the ball really hard that we kind of forget about Lourdes sometimes. And it's also like, it's just almost more of a compliment to the Blue Jays lineup rather than a slight to Lourdes Gurriel that he's like their number seven hitter or number six hitter, mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. it is. Like, right. Like on another team, he's batting in the top four. And he's been in the top four with the Blue Jays before. He's not right now just because they have kind of an established top four. But I think that the thing with him is you hope that he doesn't have the sort of troubles that he had early on the season. And he did mention, he didn't go into any details, but he did mention that he had made some tweaks to his mechanics a little bit in the sense, and all he said was basically he simplified things. Like he whatever he was doing maybe early on in the year was a little more complicated, maybe got away from some things, some basics that he'd always done. And so probably in this last few months here, certainly in the second half, and certainly recently, he's just kind of simplified things a little bit. So whatever he's doing right now, it's working. and I think it's probably going back to like what he's done in the past, it's also worked, which is good to see.
I mean, I think that he is who he is, and all the things that you said, I would agree with. That they use that really like cinematic sort of Steadicam shot of him hitting that grand slam from the first base camera well, and yeah. It's just such a great shot. And you see that swing as you described. He really catches it out front, I think, that thing, too. It's super aggressive, ambushes the first pitch, gets that out front, drives it a mile into left field. All-time bat slam, like just heave that bat into the ground as hard as he can. I think he's still who he is, and when his timing's not great, and because he is so aggressive like everybody in the Blue Jays, he is prone to be made to look foolish when he's over-aggressive or if his timing isn't there. But he is a guy that has great plate coverage as well, and obviously he is... He's a study in contrasts. Bless Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I mean, obviously, again, great pure hitter described, and guy who can barrel anything and hits the ball hard. Just an absolute despotic fielder, just terrible out there. but I got done with an amazing arm. But just the other thing also, he got picked off today because he is a terrible like slow runner. But at the same time, like, who cares? You know, when you hit it over the fence, you don't have to be fast. So a very entertaining player, a guy who's just absolutely come up huge at the right time as the Blue Jays continue to try to creep back into and over the teams in the wild card race. They are...
It's funny how, like... I was just going to say, like, we'll kind of get into what you were probably going to get into. Like, the wild card race is, you know, for the AL East is such a good competitive division. But at the same time, you have these two teams that are just like, and by two teams, I mean the Red Sox and the Yankees, that just seem to continuously get in their own way. And obviously, the Red Sox are dealing with a COVID outbreak right now, which is, you know, unfortunate for them. But they were having troubles before that. I mean, they were sort of showing their warts, and I think they were coming down to earth a little bit after their first half heroics. And the Yankees, I mean, they went on that tear, that 13-game winning streak. And since then, they have not been good. I think they've lost 7 of 9 since then. And they have completely gone back to the team that can't hit. They can't hit. Like, they do not score runs. They have a lot of guys who are just not producing the way that they need to produce. And essentially, if they don't have Judge and Stanton going, like, the team doesn't go. They, you know, and those two guys, like, yeah, of course you're going to have guys on your team that kind of, you know, dominate the scoring. And the Blue Jays certainly have, we just talked about how their entire offense is hitting well right now. But there's different points of the year where it's been Simeon and Vlad carrying the team, or Vlad and Bo carrying the team. Like, certainly Blue Jays have gone through those phases. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, the one thing that I've said throughout this a lot of times on the radio interviews, and maybe I've written this in so many words a few times, that when you looked at sort of the Fangraphs playoff odds and all this kind of stuff, and the Blue Jays are down to 10% or 9%, and now they're up to like 20-something percent or whatever. And, you know, that's all just a projection. It's not necessarily real. It's just looking at, you know, the team's record and games and schedule and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing that I've maintained is that, like, why I think the Blue Jays have better odds than maybe the exact odds suggest is that, like, the teams that they're chasing have had these, like, obvious troubles all year long, and they have not been able to figure themselves out. And I just don't necessarily think that three games at this point is a lot to make up for the Blue Jays if you're looking at how the Yankees and the Red Sox are currently playing, and not just like how they're currently playing as if like it's just sort of a bad streak like what the Blue Jays were doing before, but it's like the issues that the Yankees and the Red Sox are having are issues that have been going on all season long. I think with the Blue Jays, when the offense wasn't hitting and the Blue Jays didn't look so good those last 2 weeks, it was not completely concerning because you had to just assume that a team that has hit for 4 months or whatever it was is just having a bad 2 weeks, as opposed to this 2 weeks is actually what the real team is, as opposed to the entire rest of the season when they were the best hitting team in baseball.
No team is perfect, right? I think all the teams, just the fact that they're doing exactly what we're describing, the fact that they are fighting for wild card spots means they're not perfect teams. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox are a team that I didn't think would be a contender this year. I didn't think the Red Sox would be in a playoff position every minute of the season, basically, until now. At different times, it has.
They
still are. Excuse me. They, at different times, have looked like they're about to completely collapse. Right? The Red Sox have looked just like they're going to go to pieces. But inevitably, somehow, it's like Hunter Renfroe has an amazing week. And just when the Red Sox look like they're out, they win like four games in a row. They take a big series against Tampa or whatever. The Yankees win 13 games in a row, and then they fall on their faces against the Orioles. Then they get blown out by the Blue Jays. Their offense has been completely gone for humongous stretches of the season. Gleyber Torres is having like not a great season. You know, Gary Sanchez is still a bit of a riddle, as you described. Like, you know, Aaron Judge is probably one of the most underrated players, I think, in baseball at this point. He's just so good and so consistently good, and is playing center field in that jumbo package thing they've got with Gallo and Stanton in the outfield. But like, the Red Sox are the ones that I think I can't believe that they're still here. Like, I look at that team and I'm like, sure, they can score a lot of runs, but that team is trash, is kind of what I think a lot of the time when I watch the Red Sox. And then it obviously doesn't shake out. They had a really terrible loss today against the Rays, as well as you mentioned, battling a COVID-19 outbreak within the team, which I'd feel a little bit less bad about if they had, you know, what's the word? Taking the vaccine that was available to many of them, that as a team that has not even yet reached the 85% threshold. Shout out to the Detroit Tigers, by the way, 100%.
Oh,
vaccine uptake.
Did that just happen?
It was announced earlier. They had a break. They had two breakthrough cases, and AJ mm-hmm. Hinch was like, "We are like 100% of our team has been vaccinated." So, shout out to them. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The only question is, or the only concern, my concern is, and I'll ask this to you, is it too late for the Toronto Blue Jays, a team that has their own flaws, team that you know, whether or not they should be better, whether or not they have the third best record, and you know, they would be the class of any other division in baseball in a lot of ways, whether or not they have like a plus 140 run differential, they still lost a lot of games that they didn't have to lose, but they did. The Mariners are still ahead of them in the standings, even though the Mariners are terrible and like getting, you know, just dead ass lucky. Is there enough time for the Blue Jays to, you know, do this damn thing?
I think there is just enough time. I don't think there's a lot more time to waste. But I do think that there's still opportunity. I mean, you look at, they have three more games against the Yankees this series, and it would be very hard to win four straight games against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. I don't know that anyone would be expecting that, but if they were to do that, they would just be a half game back of the Yankees if they were to win three more. So that to me says, you know, they're close if they're playing their absolute best baseball. Then they would have to continue to sustain that. Again, they have somewhat of the schedule on their side after this Yankee series. They go to Baltimore. I go to Baltimore too. And they have four games against Baltimore. They have a doubleheader on Saturday. So there's four games against Baltimore. And I do think then they have some tough games against Tampa coming up. But then they've got seven games against Minnesota. So that is also a stretch where, I mean, Minnesota is a really bad team right now. They've been a bad team all year, but they're especially bad right now. They don't have any, I don't know who's pitching for that team right now. And so, yes, there's still opportunities for the Blue Jays. They have, you know, it's somewhat of a advantage and disadvantage that I think that the Red Sox and Yankees still have, at least a series, if not two more series, to play against each other. So it's good that one of those teams will have to lose, but also one of those teams will have to win. So it's not a scenario where the Blue Jays can have both those teams losing as they did today. Both the Red Sox and the Yankees lost today. Obviously, the Yankees lost. And I think the Mariners are losing right now pretty
big.
They're
getting killed right now by Houston at the time of us recording here on Monday night.
Yeah, so I think if if that score holds, the Blue Jays should then be tied with Seattle.
I think they might be tied in wins. They're tied. I think they have equal amount of wins as with Oakland. But anyway.
Well, yeah, it's all to say that there's enough time. I think I've done this calculation where it's like 91 wins is probably what you need to get the second wild card, I think. And the Blue Jays are at 74 wins, and they've got something like 28 more games, 27 more games. I should have done this math beforehand, but
26.
Oh, I was pretty close. 26. So I don't know. You guys, someone do the math for me.
If they go 17-7, then they're at 91 wins. 17-7 is a pretty healthy clip to win at. I think there's enough time, and you made a great point about the the remaining schedule, but it's a lot of pressure to go 17-7 to look at, as the Yankees found out this past weekend, to look at a team that you know you need to beat, but also then expect to beat them. Like, we got to take 3 out of 4, we got to take 2 out of 3, and or anything that's short of a sweep, it starts to feel like a bit of a disappointment. You know, if ever there was a team that could do it, I really think that this Blue Jays team that has demonstrated the ability to score runs in bunches and get really great starting pitching, a team that has continue to make additions. I think we haven't really talked about that, and maybe that this can be kind of the thing we go out on, which is like, they're still adding to this team.
Yes.
Right? They're still trying to tinker and find things that work. You know, the Jerod Dyson is in the mix, and they're just trying to get somebody who can run the bases a little bit and maybe give them a bit of a different look from the left-hand side. You know, Corey Dickerson playing center field. You know, they've added, you know, They add Danny Jansen to Kirk and McGuire. You know, as you and I talked about a lot, I was very worried about the playing breakdown. But it's like it doesn't matter. They can do no wrong as they send these guys out there. And then maybe a big one, something worth mentioning, is Nate Pearson, who had a terrific outing on Sunday, where mm-hmm. he struck out the side in a bit of a mop up role, but still. I'm really excited to see if they can, you know, my thing, and I'd love to hear what you think about how they're going to use Nate Pearson. I think they need to use Nate Pearson like 3 times a week, just like whatever situation, he has to get in there and just pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch. Keep throwing him out there in low leverage situations, throw him out there in high leverage situation. Just get him out on the mound, retiring pitchers, retiring big league hitters, learning that he throws 100 fucking miles an hour. And he has ridiculous stuff. Like, just let him do it until he can't. You know, obviously don't hurt him, but like, just run him out there. And if he steps up and if things start to click and he can do what he did against Oakland, well, then guess what? Now you've got an enormous arm to toss in there at the end of the game. You described your flyby with Julian Merriweather. There's another guy that throws like 99 miles an hour and has like an 80 mile an hour changeup. Like, that's just more options to make the team that needs to win 17 games out of 26 or go 17-7, whatever we settle on, more good players to help make that happen. So that's what I'm excited, and that's what I think they can do. I'll ask you in the form of a question, which is what we're supposed to be doing here. What do you think about Nate Pearson? How often do you think we're going to see him? Do you think that they're going to maybe ramp up that leverage? Are they going to try to get more out of them, or just are they going to be maybe a bit more reluctant or a bit more cautious with Nate Pearson this time around?
I think they'll probably be fairly cautious, but I also don't think they're going to be afraid to use him. I think that he was used on Friday when it was not so good of an outing, kind of a so-so outing, and it was low leverage in the sense that they were losing, and he a couple runs scored on him, and just didn't look like he had the command, and you know, guys were hitting him. And then I actually didn't see the outing on Sunday because I was traveling, but the way you describe it and what I heard and just basically the box score, like, suggests that it was a good, you know, peak Nate outing, what you want to see. So yeah, I would think that, you know, I think the Blue Jays, the circle of trust of relievers, is still, Richard, Simber, Meza, Romano. That was the combination that they chose to use today outside of Romano because he wasn't needed, but he was also in the rotation today in case they did need him. So to me, that is still the core guys, and that's who you're going to go to. But having the option to have Nate Pearson, especially if you know, you've used Tim Meza, and Tim Meza has a history with the arm, you want to be careful with him, and you don't want to use him necessarily back-to-back or a ton. And so those are the times when you do need guys like Nate Pearson and Brian Baker and to step up a little bit, and then Julian Merriweather whenever he comes back, to step up a little bit and be able to take those outings and be able to contribute, because that's why they're here. Like, the Blue Jays this isn't like a, you know, summer camp for them. Like, they're not just here for to learn about the major leagues. Like, they're here to contribute. This is a playoff race the Blue Jays are in, and they have to help, because if they're not helping, then the Blue Jays probably aren't getting to the playoffs. Like, they do need everyone to contribute. But I also don't think they're going to, like, ask Nate Pearson to, like, close a game. Like, they're not going to throw him in super high leverage. But, you know, if it's like a 3-run game or something and they, you know, they need him, like I think they'll go to him. I don't think they'll go to him on back-to-back days. And I don't know that they'll push him. I don't know that they'll push him beyond two innings. Or sorry, beyond one inning. I mean, not push him to two innings. I don't know there's enough time to do that. But yeah, I kind of like middle of the road, maybe answer for you in the sense that, like, you know, they're going to be cautious, but I don't think they're going to be like so cautious that you're only going to see him sparingly. Like, I think he's here to pitch.
I think that sounds good to me. I agree that they won't pitch him back to back. That seems like something that they're not keen to do. And I'm fine with that. That's why I said 3 days a week. 3 days a week gives him an extra day here or there. But my hope is just that we see him a lot. And if that's baby steps through these low leverage situations, and then he can earn his way into that circle of higher leverage trust, that is best case scenario for me, and best case scenario for the 2021 Blue Jays, who are just trying to win games. And they have lots of opportunities to do that. They're in tough on Tuesday against Gerrit Cole, but they have gotten to him earlier this season. They got to him a couple times, I believe, once in the aftermath of the great sticky stuff thing that he definitely seems to have found his way through, like a lot of guys. I'm talking about Gerrit Cole. But it's an exciting week if you're a Blue Jays fan. It's all we ever really, if you're a Blue Jays fan, if you're me or whatever, it's all you ever really could have asked for is that they got a shot. 17-7, according to Caitlin McGrath, is the key to the Golden City. And that's doable. It's hard, but it's doable. That's only winning, what, 68% of the games? A little bit less, maybe a little bit more. So you can manage that. 2 out of 3. Win 2 out of 3 every single time out. You think, Caitlin, you stand by that? Is that math checkout?
Sure.
What do you have for the people coming up this week? Are you gonna put New York in the byline, like extra large letters?
I forgot to do that today. Yeah. But today, Lindsay and I have a piece up that you can read now because it's posted now as we're recording, but it'll also be posted tomorrow morning when you wake up and listen to this podcast. And Lindsay and I did a back and forth where we talked a little bit about our team situations. And obviously, she's had sort of an entertaining year covering the Yankees because they've just sort of been nonstop drama, which is not unlike the Blue Jays, honestly. They've been interesting as well. There's always been something to happen with the Blue Jays. So, yeah, I mean, and then I'm going to be here and I'm going to be on the road and writing about your Toronto Blue Jays. And then I have some stuff that I'm working on now and will come out later this month.
It's very exciting. I won't lie. I'm excited to read that story between you and Lindsay, friend of the show. Lindsay Adler, who of course is very famous on Twitter now. She only famous people get the Looney Tunes official account in your mentions. That's hard to do. But 4 against New York, 4 against Baltimore. Again, you talk about an opportunity to win some games, an opportunity to put the pressure on those teams above them. That is a situation that the Blue Jays are currently in. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. You can follow her on Twitter, which you should do. You can follow me at Drew Groff. You can read her, Caitlin, on The Athletic. And you can enjoy the games. I hope everyone is able to enjoy the games. I hope the games are enjoyable in a way that the beautiful game is the one that you win, is the famous sort of pragmatic soccer saying. And I think that's something the Blue Jays fans will take as well. 8-0, 2-1, walk-off walks, doesn't matter. Just win. Put those wins on the board and let the rest of it take care of itself. So for Caitlin McGrath, my name is Drew Fairservice. We will talk to you next time.